narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beale about Lost Souls Podcast. I'm joined this evening by Red Powell.
Hello.
And Adam Camilleri.
I'd like to apologize to the people of the world for not getting my rant on Tau.
Oh, you're going to get it. You're going to get the rant.
Oh, they're going to get it. Yeah, I'll make up another one. I'll pull another faction out of my... Yeah, and do that too.
Can we just still be excited about two wound Death Guard coming down the pipe soon?
We're not allowed to, apparently, because they're not Xenos.
Oh, well...
The internet has vetoed our excitement.
I keep seeing... Okay, so I've cultivated my feed on Twitter and Instagram to just be hobby stuff, and I've seen just like a ton of superbly painted Death Guard. And I don't know, maybe that's my device picking up on my brainwaves like it does and feeding me the content that I want. But yes. I'm so excited about some of these changes.
I am too. I'm just excited about possible Terminator edition where Terminators don't feel clumsy and crap.
Yeah, and then I also thought about like Rhinos. The Impulsor was great because it could deliver 12 wounds. I mean, plus, you know, or minus, give or take a character to the right spot, but a Rhino can deliver 20 wounds now to a certain spot.
That is very true.
Soon, when we get this revamp of the Marines, Rhinos at the price point they are they like the ultimate? Are they back to being the ultimate?
I mean, the Impulsor does have a few more things going for it, stuff like the -2 to charge and having the fly keyword, things of that ilk. But I like Rhinos again. I'm actually a big fan of Rhinos. I was always a big fan of Rhinos, but admittedly, the Impulsor did make them feel a bit awkward. Yeah, I think Rhinos are cool. And there's a myriad of things now that are worth putting inside it. Well, I've been seeing a lot of Grey Knight players just chucking Strike Marines inside of Rhinos again, which I think is cool as.
I haven't seen anybody mention this yet, but two wound Devastators.
I have seen people mention that. And Iron Hands players in particular being like, oh, wow, that Devastator bomb that I can drop down and pick up whatever I want might not just auto-die. It might get to shoot again. And that terrifies me. That absolutely terrifies me. The fact that it actually might get to shoot twice.
Could be interesting.
Well, and you can bring more Space Marines with those. And that's just that many more Blade of Wounds it can soak.
Yeah, it's true. Yep.
That at the end of 8th, that grav bomb and a drop pod it's pretty popular for a couple of different builds.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe it's back.
I don't know if it actually went away. I think that it still had it's still very efficient even now, you know.
Now, I don't know. We're getting any time that we get the opportunity to take older models off the shelf or out of the foam or whatever, yeah. I get a little excited about it.
Me too, man.
I know people are kind of fatigued on Marines, but it's a difference. It feels like that there's a big, I guess, vastness of options.
They're new old Marines. It's return to the Back to the Future.
Yeah. But you know, you'd return already talked about Star Cannons getting a resurgence.
Yeah. I think so. I think wave servers with Star Cannons are actually pretty legit now. Star Cannons on anything, actually, for that matter. I think Warwalkers coming in. Warwalkers with Star Cannons. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, I think they can be pretty respectable now. Even I don't know, maybe I might be talking out my absolute whatever now, but you can put Star Cannons on the weapon platforms in Guardian units.
You
can. I know Guardians aren't in the greatest of spots, but still, that's pretty cool.
I like Guardians, you know, well, I should say I used to like them for their footprint, and you could get a nice, like, fat bubble of bodies to do the lightning fast on. I mean, there have been so many times where Guardians have just saved my bacon simply for the fact that they existed. Now, you can't do the same things with them more. I mean, this was like spreading things out and having them protect a couple of characters or whatever because they had to be the closest. And you can't do that the same way anymore. But, you know, you can still take a 20-man unit if you want.
Can.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're
absolutely
right.
Yep. I mean, I would almost advocate that higher than taking 10 mans. I think you're better off if you're going to take any Guardians at all, you just go straight to the top and take a 20.
Yeah.
And then you start chucking the buffs on it like you used to.
You only get the weapon platform. But yeah,
I thought you could get one per 10. I thought it was two in a 20 man. Maybe I'm wrong.
Is it two in a 20 man? I've only ever really recently taken them either. Let's look at that right now. We don't have to guess. I mean,
are cheating against me.
Oh, no. They must not be. Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, if Adam had the app, he could look it up.
Oh, there we go. Here we go. I'm going to not get it now. I was tempted to get it the other day. I just forgot.
No.
But I'm going to not get it now just so we get mileage out of this joke. Like, I feel like it'd be a shame if I went up, hey, guys, I've got the app now. Everyone would be really disappointed.
I was going to apologize for leading astray, but we did get to make this joke. So, you know, hey, here we are.
There you go.
Yeah.
I still get Star Cannons. Star Cannons, and then I guess you can still do the... you know, dump wounds trick to them, to the thing. Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. It has a 3+
But once you, but now the crappier bit is, now that you start dumping wounds on it, you have to keep putting saves on it until it's gone. You couldn't just go back and forward. Like when someone's putting like a single las cannon shot, you're like, well, I'm taking on a guardian who might have a 4+ invulnerable save.
Yeah.
And then when you're going back to like all your bolter shots, you're like, ah, 2+ armor or 3+ armor save on my platform.
Yeah.
And you can't do that now. I suppose there's only a couple of units that really suffer from that. I know my Borgrin aren't a huge fan. I'm probably Red. You can probably empathize there. We used to have this awesome thing where we could chop and change between a possible 0+ armor save and a 3+ invulnerable save, depending on whatever we were up to. But then there's also Deathwatch veterans. They're going to suffer a little bit from this as well, because they had the Terminators along with the Storm Shields. And you think of any other things that are going to suffer?
No one has a mixed save anymore. There isn't too much. I guess you could. I was going to say potentially put like a Storm Shield on a veteran sergeant.
Yeah, maybe? I was going to say like Vanguard veterans.
Oh yeah, Vanguard vets. Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
I suppose drones as well at some points. I know shield drones, you used to be able to get them a 3+ armor save at some points. If you could get them cover, they'd go to 3+ armor, or they have the 4+ invuln and the 5+ essentially FNP. I used to jank around with that a bit, especially when I was playing against sometimes other towerists. We've had a lot of fire warriors and things. I'd have a 3+ armor on my drones. That'd be pretty cool. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be that huge anymore, is it?
No.
Well, I mean, it could definitely come up, but it's what we've seen is in these recent. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. We've seen wholesale removal of jankiness from the game.
Yeah.
In a lot of regards, yeah.
Just for us to figure out what the new jankiness is.
I mean, people are going to keep trying, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of our, it's part of our charm. It's just as a group of gamers.
Game is going to game. Yeah. Game is going to game.
Yeah. But a lot of it has been removed from the rules and made it in a cleaner thing, which is not bad. Getting this all, removing some awkwardness. Although I don't think that was necessarily very awkward, but at least it gave its consistency across the board, across all things. It's not, you know, nothing's gonna get around that rule that we have right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like that G-Dub's doing a good job of really cleaning up a lot of the loopholes. And I think there's almost an accept. I'm seeing articles popping up all over the place. People just saying, hey, if it sounds too good, it is too good. If you need to go through 5 levels of explanation to explain it, it's probably not supposed to be there.
So you see, if you look at this rule,
yeah,
and you do this, and you know, and this has brackets around this word, and the comma's placed here. Stop.
Yeah, yeah. I think the line is, well, technically.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's sometimes there is stuff that needs explaining. Do you know one that used to get me and that used to irritate me to no end? So I'd finally figured out a way to play Black Templars that would make them okay, and it was to play them not as Black Templars, which really really sucked. It was just to play the best shooty Marine units.
Yeah,
hurt my soul, but I had to do it to like play competitive events sometimes.
Yeah, Graf Centurions were amazing Black Templars.
Yeah, and what I was doing was Plasma Inceptors, but I had a drop pod that would have the relic banner in it. So I dropped down the Plasma Inceptors and the Relic Banner would jump out, and they'd shoot, and then they'd die, and then they'd shoot again. And so I'd get double the value, because you had to try and just squeeze extra value out of that old Marine book. I always, for the first like 2 or 3 games I played with it with my mates, I was playing as if you were just disembarking from a transport with the drop pod, as in you disembark 3 inches away and then you had a movement phase, as in you were getting out of a Rhino. But you don't. You just get the disembark. You just get the 3-inch.
Yeah.
It sucks. It sucks so much. Yeah, that kind of stuff. But yeah, then there was a lot of argument back and forth. Because I didn't want to see that as the way it was done. But then I was like, holy crap, you're actually right. It is just like that. And that sucks so much more.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's fine. It is what
it is. When you have this many interactions, you know, I think an active, heavily documented rule set that we had in 8th, where it kind of broke down a bit is it sometimes not all the faction rules were in one place.
Yeah, very true.
And that's even getting taken care of in 9th. And so I think, you know, we'll be almost at a perfect state of 40K pretty soon.
Perfect state of 40K. You know, not reaching high at all.
Well, we're going to get a great new Space Marine Codex and a Necrons.
Hopefully it's a humble but well-rounded and interesting Space Marine Codex. Hopefully it's not a big bang. We already had the Big Bang Super Codex.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit more restrained with the power level, but hopefully, because there is a huge amount of flavor and there's nothing but interesting and amazing choices within the Space Marine supplements and Codex all intertwined. I'd hate to lose the flavor there, because there is a hell of a lot of flavor, but the problem is there's just too much power.
Yeah. And look, we really, and before anyone, before there's a comment, before you listening, I understand. Yes, orcs need some help.
GSC needs some help. Hopefully Necrons are getting the help that they need. Town needs a little bit of help. But, you know, some of these things only need like one more layer of rules, and they're right up there again.
Yeah, and the guard, you know, some comments on the guard is that it is one of the oldest codexes that we have right now.
That's true. Yeah, that is really true. The powerful things that they have are still powerful, but there's a big cliff between what's still powerful and then the rest at the bottom.
I'm hoping is that... You know, when these weapon changes, and I think that was alluded to in the articles, that when some of the weapon changes for like Meltas and Flamers go into effect, that they'll be applied to all the other codex entries where those exist. I don't know if I'm just wanting to see that. Or...
No. I'm 99% sure that's exactly what it said, is that because it was talking about sisters getting it as well, right? And so it was saying that all Imperial, and then it also tossed in, you know, the Chaos Brethren that also use the same weapon types. So everybody's, we're talking about Imperials here and Chaos and whatnot. They're all going to get the upgrade with the weapons. And that's where we go back to, you know, Xenos. I mean, at least Necrons are going to get their buff with the, they're going to be brought in line with 9th edition with their codex. I'm kind of hoping, you know, I was talking to someone else today just about Eldar, the Aspect Warriors, and, you know, with all these upgrades to Space Marine weapons or Imperial weapon sets, if you want to call them that, you kind of think that the rest of the Xenos would get something to match as well, you know?
Oh, my kingdom for a functional Howling Banshee.
Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
See, I wish there was do you know how Dark Eldar have their triple patrol? If you take a Covens, a Cabal, and a Homunculus. You know what I mean.
A Coven.
You get extra bonuses. I wish there was that like that, but Aspect Warriors. If you took Jane Zarr and some Banshees in a patrol, if you took Azumin and some Dire Avengers in another patrol, and you get like you kind of get this Aspect Shrine-ish list coming back, that stuff would be really sick.
That's what I miss about the old Craft World traits. I mean, I played Beltane and the Sword Wind, which used Aspect Warriors as troops. Yeah, I know that was cheesy, but I loved it. I mean, I didn't love it because it was cheesy. I loved it because of the Court of the Young King and
the Court of the Young King's so cool.
Yeah, the ritual of awakening the Avatar, like. I just love it. I love it. And we used to have that. And now I understand that it would be difficult balance wise, but still, like, Howling Banshees haven't been good since then.
No. I mean, and Striking Scorpions are pretty much in the same thing. Of 7th edition, the only two aspects that we had any play was Reapers and Shining Spears, yeah?
Yep.
I mean, Shining Spears were like one of both, and both of those were two of the best units in the whole Eldar range.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some folks playing Swooping Hawks to a certain extent. But
That's true. When people needed a flying screen, when everyone started getting super aggressive with things like the Gene Stealers and the Berserkers charging your Alpha Legion Berserkers charging your turn one, everyone turned to like, you need minimum of two flying screens in your army just so you can't get wrapped.
That was a little gimmicky, when you saw those. And then also, what is it, the Shadow Spectres from Forge World? You saw those?
Definitely saw those.
Yeah. Yay, minus 40 hit. Everyone loved that.
Especially when they were Unari, you know, and
savage.
But you're right with like the ones that most Eldar players took were Dark Reapers. That was it. It was basically what you took. And Shining Spears.
Shining Spears are still amazing. I think like MSU Shining Spears is freaking phenomenal in 9th edition. They're like this self-contained anti-infantry, anti-vehicle, decent in combat, invuln-save like model. What more could you ask for a single anything, you know? Yeah,
they have a ton going for them.
Conduit for good stratagems. I mean, that's
exactly right.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah,
I mean, I'm not sure if there's a... So you don't want six mans, but because you want to be able to string the guys out. But I'm not sure if it's three mans, four mans, or five mans. I'm not sure where the sweet spot is. An Eldar player would have to suss that out better than I would.
I have a buddy, whenever he was playing like in just a pickup, like go to the roll down in the game store and play some random pickup games, you know, kind of like a pull shark would do or whatever. Whenever he's playing against somebody you tell that was truly new at the game, he would just play without his Shining Spears. I mean, take a 2,000 points, good. Take 600 points of Shining Spears out, and then play the game.
Yep. I've done that as well for newer players. I mean, like they've brought on their amazing, you know, they've just finished their first 2,000 points and it's this hodgepodge of different weird marine units or orc units and it doesn't really make sense. And you rock up with your, I was practicing for a tournament next weekend and you're like, yeah, I ain't playing that list anymore. And you're just like, yeah, I'm going to take that out. All those veterans with all the melter guns, they're just the infantry squads now. And all those melter guns are melter guns. yeah, but I like that stuff, though. I think it's really nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So talking about Gene Stealer cults for a second, do they get like actual flamers or is it just the hand flamers?
No, just hand flamers to my knowledge.
Yeah, I'm only tracking the hand flamers.
Are they going to benefit from the Imperial changes, if there are any?
You can get like a twin heavy flamer on the rock grinders.
There you go.
That's not going to do it. That's not going to help them.
That's not going to do it.
I mean, I know that we take the rock saws and the hand flamers and stuff, but I was just curious if they had the options that were not attractive because the other stuff was so attractive. But maybe they
benefit. they will have access to Brood Brothers, right? So Astra Militarum Brood Brothers, yeah. So they'll have that
in the chat on the FTN Facebook page and a couple other places. That's what people are doing there. They're looking to blend in that guard, and that's what that. They mention as being something that they're enjoying playing in ninth is blending in a little bit of the guard.
Yeah, it's just a change in it's just a paradigm shift, isn't it, for GSC at the moment? Until they get a new book or something fundamentally changes for the structure of their lists, because they do the one of the biggest struggles they have is it's one of each character per detachment. So if you want to take two Magoses who are really good and they've got really good psychic powers, you got to take two detachments, and all of a sudden you're already costing yourself CP, which is like the engine for that whole book is built off CP efficiency. Because otherwise you're just spicy guardsmen. You are literally spicy guardsmen with that CP. That's it.
I don't think the blips are pretty strong.
Yeah, exactly. Spicy. Like you got guardsmen with some gimmicks.
You know, the blips have those rules that you just can't get up close to. So I think the infiltrating space marines are a popular choice right now.
They sure are. Same with Nurglings as well.
And I think the blips back them up?
Well, so you can't get within a certain distance of them, but the big problem is that you want to talk about some infiltrating space marines, the infiltrators themselves, the Phobos marines that have the Omni Scramblers.
Yes.
Those guys actually ruin Gene Stealer's day because they back them up. They can't get close enough, but that 12-inch aura that the infiltrators have prevents you from setting up units within 12 inches of them, and they can essentially ruin a Gene Stealer player's day. They're like a perfect deterrent.
So then you get this issue where you've got this kind of dead zone between the two armies. The Raven Guard escort, the infiltrators can't push up on the GSC.
Right.
The GSC can't deploy and push in aggressively onto the Marines. But the only difference is there, the Marines still shoot good. The Gene Stealers
don't.
That's right. Yes, the hand flamers are not getting it done.
Back to the flamers.
Heavy flamers and rod grinders are not going to save you.
Yeah. But I think GSC's got some mileage. If you take it for what it is now, because what it is unfortunately it's an army that has a lot of pitfalls if you take them en masse. But if you were to look at, like, say you want to take a 50-50 guard and G still a cult army, you can still get a hell of a lot done. You have this stable frontage of, say, just obsec in chimeras and a couple of tank commanders, maybe a couple of artillery piece or two, and then you got all these pocket janky things, like you get your scrambler secondaries very easily, you get your engaging off fronts very easily. You can build a list out of them that gets points very well. I'm not going to say it's always going to be on the board. You're probably going to be mostly tabled by the end, but you're going to have a good score, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Look on the bright side. You have to paint fewer models.
That's true. But yeah, like, there's still upside there for Gene Stealer cult, like, because they're good at playing the mission, because they're always going to be good at playing the mission.
I think the Jackals still have a lot of play.
Absolutely.
The bikes, you know, I don't know if the Bridge Runner build survived, but...
It did, actually.
I think Jackals and Guard, well, they look cool together. And I think, you get to score a lot of points.
And, you know, if you're really cool, you get to use your Rough Rider model still for your Outriders.
There you go.
There you go.
Some Talan Camel Boys as your Outriders. That's actually sick. If anybody has any of those. I put out the call probably about 18 months ago now, but if anybody has any of those models lying around and for whatever reason you don't want them, I have a firstborn child, a kidney, and a liver to give. I would love those models. Thanks.
We'll see what we can do.
I know a guy who's got them, but I don't know if his price is still too high for you.
Yeah. So yeah, I need to get another kidney to give. I can't give two. Maybe I can. Nah.
I want to be clear that nothing about what we said is making the GSC better or giving them a benefit from like psychic awakening or whatever.
No, it's not. Yeah.
But I do think that style of build for them is better than trying the old style.
Yeah, well, it's the round peg in a square hole. You've got the same pegs, but they change the holes. So you got to adapt, and you can't if you're walking into a new edition thinking exactly the unless you're Space Marines, I guess. If you're walking into this edition thinking you just do the same things you did last edition,
even Space Marines have to adjust, in my opinion.
Yeah, they do, but not as much. I mean, Iron Hands doesn't have to adjust all that much. They can play just span the intercessors with the 5+, 5+. Put in the grav pod got better. Repulsor execution is still good. Leviathan Dread's still good. It's not going to be as broken as it was, but yeah.
Sure.
I wish I didn't say that just then.
Yeah. Well, again, these are people, you know, at least the comments that we've seen are, you know, someone wanting to be. Nobody wants to win all the time. I don't think anyone expects to win all the time.
No,
but they just
no.
want to believe that they've got a shot when they roll up to the table. But yeah. See, I mean, I know I'm a little bit of a broken record for this, but the missions I think are more conducive to that. And then once we've come to grips with the terrain rules, you're going to give more options to folks.
I agree.
And you know, well, I think that's gonna continue to evolve and develop the more we get to actually play. I mean, like right now, it's kind of weird. You know, I know Tabletop Simulator exists, but I still think that there's some percentage of games that are not getting played right now that would be getting played, where some of this stuff would be developing more quickly.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair to say, for sure.
And myself included. I mean, some of this stuff is. I mean, I have not played against GCLR Cults because the guy that I know that plays GCLR Cults hasn't been over to the house. You know, that's
yeah.
So you know, my
simple as that.
Yeah, I mean that's it. I do again really like Guard though, and I think they have pretty much. I'm going to still go on record to say that the Guard are going to be one of the strongest lists in this edition because of all the tools they have.
Yeah, I think as soon as we get a Dex, like I said, there is a big cliff between the good and the rest. Like Tank Commander is still amazing. Tank Commander is a friggin' phenomenal. That max payload, I don't know if anybody knows what the max payload Mandacore is, but you should look that up. You're probably going to see it. It's going to be either in guard lists or sprinkled into a bunch of other lists. So that's a Mandacore that has flat 3 damage on his shots. Doesn't roll the D3s. It's ferociously good. On top of that,
the relic like Lost Cadia with it still.
Yeah, you can. If it's Cadian, for sure you can. Or you can use Vengeance for Cadia on it.
Vengeance for Cadia, yeah.
Yep. There's a bunch of different ways you can buff it. Hell, you can use a Master of Ordnance for real ones, or Harker if you're Calachan.
Harker, that's right. Mm. Harker.
I love Harker. He's such a beefcake.
He's a boss. He killed a Predator, you know? He's great.
For the for the longest time, you know, I thought Vengeance for Lost Cadia was just a Cadian thing. And I remember sitting in between rounds at a tournament and reading that over again, and like the light bulb going off.
No, they like, wouldn't.
What? I had this the whole time.
Yeah. So of all the stratagems that I think should have gone up over the 3 years of 2 or 3 years of that book being out, I have no idea why they never put Vengeance for Cadia up to like two CP, let alone possibly
only
3 CP.
Specific. That's why. I mean,
yep. It's only when you're fighting Chaos.
But it's so savage when you're fighting Chaos.
It sure is. But they deserve it. Cadia.
They know what they know what they did. They know exactly what they did.
Yeah. If they didn't want it, then they shouldn't have broken it.
That's right.
That's fair. Brought it on themselves.
Should I do my Tau rant? Yeah. So I promised like 3 to 4 minutes on Tau. So Tau, right. Yes.
Everybody, hang on, get ready, everybody.
Okay, I'm gonna start with the bad things that happened to Tau, and then I'll wrap it up with the good things, hopefully, the exciting things. The things to get you. This is my passion, motivation. This is like my pregame coach speech, you know? You gotta want it, you gotta, you know.
See, Warhammer is a game ages.
You know, like I'll be your Mickey. You guys can be Rocky, I'll be Mickey for this one. You know, you're a beast, you're a finned weird fish beast, you're tuna cow. But they did get this threefold hit. The first hit being, of course, the points increases to drones and a bunch of other things, but most notably the shield drones. And that fundamentally changed the archetype. That fundamentally changed the way you had to build and conceptualize your Tau list. Because you always had this safety net. You had this really, really well-built safety net of just, oh, I could just take 40 drones. No matter what else I take in my army, I've got this stability of 40 shield drones, which have the effectiveness, you know, of, because of the 4+ and the 5+, they're the effectiveness of something close to 60 to 70 toughness 4 wounds, ablated wounds. And not to mention the fact that you can interchange that with taking the 2+ save on the Riptides and the broadsides and things like that. But they got the hit there, increased it by 50% of their points. Then you had the issue with the fly changes. Now, there was a big reliance on fly with Tau. The fact that you could play very aggressively and no one could tap you. They ran in, they tapped you, they got shot by a lot of Overwatch. And then if they made it to you, you just fell back and you shot them again anyway. Didn't even matter. Doesn't make any freaking difference to you. But now everything can get tapped, everything can get bogged down, everything can have been neutered or have their powers turned off. And then the last one is the basic change of the nature of the missions. The fact that you have to be dynamic, you have to move around the board, you have to be doing and acting and taking part in the movement phase, which some armies did very well. I know the more famous of the Tau armies towards the end of the edition did exceptionally well. Things of these conceptualized by Siegler and Paul and gentlemen of those ilk, those top tier players who made this really dynamic and maneuverable Tau list. But that wasn't, that was a very hard list to play consistently at a top level. I know a lot of people who tried and they did well, but they never did as well as they wanted to, or as well as they feel like they could have, because it had a pretty high skill ceiling. You had to maneuver yourself and keep yourself in a central position for a long period of time and call your shot perfectly on your Kalyons and your Montcars and all these things, and then know exactly what your over-unders were on your 3-plus invulns and where you put your stuff. Because despite Tau, people malign Tau as this, it's a lame, boring army. It is. It only plays in two phases of the game. It plays a movement phase and it plays a shooting phase. But those two phases, you have to milk every single point of efficiency out of. Because if you have a crappy shooting phase, that's your whole turn's planning gone. That's last turn's planning gone as well. And you've got to do double the work next time. And you've only got the same amount of guns, hopefully. You've probably got less due to you know, diminishing returns. But yeah, so while I think Tau might be in this pretty awkward place starting, you've got a lot of freedom. Your safety net's gone. There is no reason to buy into these supposed, what people think is this stale kind of play where you just, oh yeah, here's my 40 drones and my 3 Riptides, and then I just sprinkle in some stuff. Crisis suits. Crisis suits have never been better, except for maybe in 4th and 5th edition. They haven't been this good in ages. On top of that, the freedom that Farsight Enclaves gives you. Farsight and Crisis Suits give you what I believe is what you need to play the missions well. Being able to take more than two or three commanders, being able to take four commanders if you want, that's not too unreasonable to take four commanders. Some of those being Cold Stars, some of them being Enforcers or whatever you please. That gives you a lot of maneuverability. That gives you a lot of dynamics on the board. On top of that, like I said, Riptides are still good. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Riptides aren't good, but you don't need me to tell you that. I'm going to tell you about Ghost Kills. Ghost Kills are freaking amazing because you need mid-board presence early. And if you do want to play an army that has a bit more of a stable backline or a stable whatever, Ghost Kills give you the functionality of having a mid-board presence without extending anything past your gun line. You can build your stable gun line and still have a presence and project and push back deep strikes, push back aggressive elements from your opponent. Secondly, piranhas. If anybody's not looking at piranhas, go and look at piranhas. If you want something that's going to be able to jump on objectives quickly for you when you need to, and when you kill them, they drop off two drones that you also need to kill, or you can do the opposite, and here's what I think you should do with them. First turn, disembark all your drones off your piranhas, and then all of a sudden you exponentially increase the amount of bodies you have protecting your key units, be that broadsides, riptides, crisis suits, ghost kills, whatever they are, and then zoom those guys around and make sure you get them killed. The whole point of them existing is to get some points and be annoying enough to get themselves killed. Think of things I could do with a rhino, yeah? But they're cheaper. They're only about 64 points, I believe. You take them with the fusion if you really want to, if you want to upgrade them a bit. Take them with a seeker missile if you feel the need. But man, piranhas, ghost kills, crisis suits, commanders, look into Farsight Enclaves. There's still a lot of meat on the bone. And I'll finish off one of the most favorite things I have for Tau is Fish of Fury. Fish of freaking Fury. I know the two gentlemen I'm talking to right now can tell you a lot about Fish of Fury, being in that 5th edition, kind of the key element of the way they worked. Take that concept away and replace it with breaches instead of the Fire Warriors. It's good. I'm not going to say it's phenomenal, but it's exciting. Put a couple of SMS on that Devilfish along with the Burst Cannon, and then all of a sudden it's going to be adding value through a lot of turns of the game. Doesn't matter about terrain, it's still going to be adding value no matter where it goes. And then one, like, you know, let's say they're Farsight Enclaves as well. You do divulge, digorge, whatever they are, breaches into your opponent's face on an objective. And with the roll wants to wound, and they're strength 6 when they're at minimum range, being strength 6 minus 2, rolling wants to wound. Guardsmen are not going to stand a chance. Nurgans are not going to stand a chance. Termagants, all these toughness 3 body holders not going to stand a chance, and you don't need a big squad of breaches. Two units of 5 and maybe a character go along. Is it a Farsight marksman or is it a the guy that gives them extra shots? I'm not sure he gives extra shots to them. Maybe it's just the rifles.
Cadre Fireblade.
If he does buff them, if not, whatever. You can just do the same thing with Fire Warriors. But Fisher Fury is back. Ghost Kills, I think, are in a very exciting place. Piranhas are actually, I believe, what you need to make sure you're going to get a good score on the board. Things of Piranhas ilk, either them or, I don't know, Vespid. I would love to see Vespid be a thing. But for them, based with a backbone of maybe your Riptides and then a good amount of commanders, I think Tau can still play in a lot of facets of the game. They're not in a great place, but it's not the be all. They're not in the bottom. They're not the bottom of the bottom. They've still got some plays, guys. Hopefully that was a good pep.
Oh, man, there you go. There's, hey, that maybe one listen guy to that, that asked for that. There
maybe
it is.
Listen to that at half speed as well. I did. Yeah. I did go cracking along.
Look, yeah, if I knew how to work a soundboard, I'd put in some clapping or something right now. That was good. That was good. So, what do you think the best loadout for a Riptide is?
If you're taking one, it's obviously going to be the Ion Cannon. Yeah, it's ridiculously exactly. good.
It's out of control.
Yeah. Past that, the burst cannons are still better. The burst cannons are better than a regular Ion. That one Ion, especially when people think they're going to be a lot of vehicles around. I think it's stupendously good. It's really strong. I've seen that thing one shot those 4+ invulnerable save plague burst crawls as well. And just having that power on the board, exciting.
Wow. Hey, well, that's it, guys. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back after a brief word from our sponsor and then jump back with us.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Hopefully you survived my rant.
Man, I hope the towel's out of y'all's system now.
Yeah, it is. It's long gone. I'm gonna go eat some tuna for lunch, just to get a taste of flesh under my mouth. You know.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about what you were saying when you were saying it is that the drones. I mean, they basically bought you free time. I mean, I'm not gonna go beat it to death because we talked about it on previous shows, but you could pretty much, to quote a Magic the Gathering term, you could time walk your opponent. Like they could waste their entire phase and not reduce any of the potential of your army. And then and you mentioned the shooting phase, like you could actually do that to yourself too if you had a poor shooting phase. And then if it ever was flipped to where they killed all your drones and then you flubbed a roll of shooting, you were done. Like your turns 3 through 6 did not exist for you.
Yeah, especially when the scoreboard as well. And some of the other game systems, I don't know if it was as prevalent for things like ITC, but Maelstrom, like basic rulebook missions and the ETC kind of formats where you had to be progressive on the scoreboard. If you had one bad movement phase, if you like made one or two mistakes in your movement phase and then just rolled unders on your shooting phase, you're like, your game is over. It was like, okay, cool. I guess I was gonna maybe be getting a small win here, and now it's a huge loss.
Yeah, so it wasn't as easy mode as we always used to make fun of it.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it never was. I mean, I played Tau at the highest level. I took them to WTC for Team Australia. Yeah, it was not easy. It was very hard. On top of that, because the prevalence of terrain at that event meant that like I was always having to be perfect. Like the onus was on me was to be perfect. Like, I was playing an Orc player, and if I wasn't perfect, he was going to charge me with 120 boys. You know, but I had to be on midboard objectives. I didn't have the option of not being on those objectives. But if I wasn't perfect, I was going to get swamped. So there is still a lot of stuff like that. And that stuff's for Tau's only gone up, which means I think you have to be more flexible. You can't have this one big centralized ball of an army. Firstly, you won't get any points. And secondly, you're so much easier to lock down.
I didn't mind those games though. I mean, full disclosure, I'm bearing my soul right now. I didn't mind those types of games because the tension was very high in the first couple of turns. And then when it went your way, it was as like a bubble pop. You just like, oh.
Big tension release.
Yeah.
But you let down a couple of your fans there, Paul, because you had this opportunity when you said, I'm going to bare my soul. And I thought you were just going to say, like, I am Sanguinius in like the Batman voice. Like, I am Sanguinius.
I'll save that one. I don't remember that.
Save it. Next time. Don't miss the opportunity again.
So talking about that, the time walking thing and everything, Adam, I got something, a question to run by you, I guess, in regards everything we've talked about from the previous session and then this. So Farsight Enclave, and this is just me bouncing around some stuff with other guys, and I've told you my Tanith guard list, and I've got a plethora of infantry on the field. If I take 4 Farsight commanders between 2 battalions apiece, and then I run 12 squads of breachers, what do you think?
I love it. Are those breaches just walking along the table? If they're just walking, they're better off being fire warriors.
I think that's the thing, right? There's probably a good balance between the two, of fire warriors and breachers. And so your front ranks are the breachers that are going to get there, and then you've got the fire warriors in the back holding whatever that. I mean, but it's just, you talk about, Paul, you mentioned time walking, and I have 120. Fire warrior breacher squads on the field with, and they can actually come with, you still got points for drones and whatnot. And then you've got the commanders going around surgically removing threats, and you could waste X amount of turns trying to just wipe out X amount of squads of fire warriors, but I'm still there.
you probably want this mixture of weapons on your commanders. What are the cold stars in that one? You'd probably want either missile commanders and cyclic ion commanders, probably a combination, maybe two of each, sure. Just to give you the better profiles. Because then you've got two backfield commanders who just sit objectives in the security and fire missile pods down long range. And, of course, you can take the custom sept if you wanted to get the bonus to the missiles, or just, well, then you would lose fast sight, to be honest. So I guess you couldn't do that. But, those combinations, like, I really rate the missile pod commanders. I rate them higher than the cyclic ions simply because I think the ions are pretty expensive. They might have gone down or changed, though, because I haven't looked at them since new edition. So maybe they're in a different spot now. But, yeah, I preferred – and when I took my list to WTC, I took Missile Manders over the Cyclic Ions as well. And that's just because of the range. I just like the range. Anything over 36 now in this game is essentially max range. You can get anywhere on the board, especially when you've got is an 8-inch move on the regular Commanders? It is, isn't it?
Do you not consider that an edge case, though? I play, or I should say, I don't play, but I take weapon options sometimes that are for those edge cases. Going all the way back to third edition, I would always pack a heavy flamer in my list because I knew that whatever list I would typically build was like weak against that one thing where I might need a flamer at one time. Do you think your missiles are that in that like style or that thought process? Or do you really think they're the superior option?
Yeah, well, I think a mix of the two is a superior option. I think taking four cyclic ions commanders locks you into being in a mid-board position when sometimes you won't want to be. And then if you want to try and let your opponent take the mid-board, then take it back, you're possibly at least missing two or three turns of scoring before they come into relevance. Whereas if you had two missile commanders, you'd be consistently clearing one player off one objective like all game. From wherever they are on the board, you can reach out and put some pressure on that objective, make them continually put resources back there, or a couple of other things. But look, I think the nuanced stuff like that, Paul, it comes down to player preference. And on top of that, it comes down to experience and the meta and the people you play against. If you are finding you're struggling, or you're playing against other gunlines, things like AdMech, things like stable marine gunlines, Imperial Fists or whatnot, you might be better taking all cyclics. You might be better chucking in those flamer crisis suits or the airburst fragmentation crisis suits, which I'm actually pretty high on. For those who don't know, the airburst frag crisis suits essentially is putting a mortar on them, D6 strength 4 shots, you give it ATS, and it's strength 4 minus 1. For clearing objectives, safe screening objectives, that stuff's really good, especially when you can get ignores cover on demand and marker lights, rerolls to hit or rerolls to wound from a plethora of different sources. So I like that kind of stuff. I'm not sure that's a big unit, though. Maybe that's just a single three-man for clearing off infantry squads and things of that ilk. But what I like is that despite Tau being in a weird place, they've still got a lot of options. They're still a very fleshed-out faction. Their codex was kind to them. The mechanics of 9th edition are not that kind to them, but their codex still has inherent strengths.
I mean, being the only faction that gets free Overwatch, I would say 9th edition has been pretty kind to them.
Yeah, if they didn't have that, it'd be like, that's rough.
Save me from all this. Let's talk about Sanguinary Guard.
Okay. All right. How long did we get into that? That might be a new record.
I'm over here breaking out in the sweats. I can't.
We're like 40 minutes in, and I mentioned Blood Angels before you did. Are you okay? Are you unwell?
We don't have to talk about Blood Angels, except
that's fine.
20 plus Sanguinary Guards, still pretty good.
Yep,
I'll just leave it at that. They're still pretty good.
How big are you thinking your unit's going to be? Because I'm not sure you want to go 10 mans with them
anymore. Eight man, I think is what it's at. I think three eight man squads. You can't go wrong with that. Maybe that's too many. I don't know, but I think that you would not be in a bad place if you still wanted to field three eight man squads.
Well, because I think if you're taking the bigger squad now, you just take it hopefully as two wound death company, and that's your first turn. Shove it right down their throat. Make them scramble to address it, and then back it up with these more surgical units of Sanguard, because then you've got your big hammer death company that's going to be rushing them turn one, and then the Sanguard follow up and take care of all the little, because they can go anywhere on the table from like a midboard spot, which they'll get to on their first move.
2-1 death company, I mean, obviously 100% more attractive than one wound death company.
Who would have thought?
But I think that when you take the DC, that it also then leads you to take, well, I might as well take Lamartis, and then you start building support around that. And I'm not
sure they need support. As soon as they get to the second wound, I'm like, What do they need help killing?
You don't want them necessarily more help killing things, but you definitely want them to get into combat all the time, 100%.
Because the Mighty gives reroll charges, doesn't
he? All the time, yeah, yeah. And then he's got the chaplain buffs, and then he's got the Death Company bonuses. So I'm not going to talk out of taking Death Company like either.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think if you are solely focused on the most efficiency, then you go with a 24 secondary guard. If you are building the thematic list, you definitely have a max unit at a Death Company. You don't necessarily have to take the Thunder Hammers, but if they go to 4 damage and it goes across the board, then you're going to want them.
Yeah. Well, so I'm a big fan of Astaroth. I'm a huge fan of Astaroth.
I know. He's a must-have. He's a must-have no matter who you're taking. I think he's an auto-include.
He's almost at like Mephiston levels of awesome, where he's kind of this self-contained, I can sit here and buff your army, I can run around and just kill stuff by myself, pretty much anything. So I had, I played a game, I had 12 Breaches, Cataphron Breaches, and I had them fully buffed. So I had a 3+, no, I don't think I had the 3+ in Gone on them.
Crafty Devil,
had him,
back to Tau.
No, that's Admech, you slug. Oh. Nah.
Oh, you said, yeah, those breachers. Okay, breachers.
Those breachers.
Yeah.
There you go.
How dare you? No, yeah, and he went in there. These guys had a 4+ invulnerable save. He just killed 9 of them. he just killed 9 of them, man. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not paying 3 CP, so 2 CP to keep these 3 breaches. And he killed the whole unit. All 12 died because Astaroth touched one of them.
I do think that he is, pound for pound, probably, I mean, Mephiston, don't hear me say this. But
yeah, like close your ears, please.
Probably the best because he gets fly, you know, automatically.
Yeah,
like he doesn't.
Yeah.
Have
well, to, he's the. Is he yeah. the best chaplain in the game? Is he the best Chappie in the game? Like, I mean, you can make a White Scar smash Chappie that's utterly terrifying, but he doesn't have 2 litanies.
The custom is when you give the Master of Sanctity and then like a really good relic or something, then like damage output, he might not be the best, but out of the box, just. On paper, stats by himself, I think he is the best.
Yeah, I'd have to say it because I love my Grimaldus, I love my Asmodai, but they don't kill like he kills. They don't butcher like he butchers.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't blend. He is the Nutribullet to their standard target $10 blenders.
Yeah. We don't actually have to talk about Blood Angels. I just had to feel like I needed to purge some.
No,
of
no. That. I think that's a good jump. I really think that. I mean, I think that a concern, and this goes back to what Adam was saying in regards of. Space Marines in 9th edition, like I think you're on the right path there, Paul, with 24 Sanguinary Guard, Death Company and all, Astaroth for sure. My question, I guess, to that being, when it comes to objective secured, how comfortable do you feel with the 9th edition missions and being able to lock? I mean, you've got the tools to kill stuff for sure, but are you concerned about objective secured stuff in that at that point?
I approach every game the same way. That you can't score points if you don't have models.
That is a technique.
I knew he was going to say that? He's going to say he's just going to kill everything, isn't he?
Well, okay. But realistically, though, like my troops are those incursors and infiltrators and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like that, I mean, I'm a big, like I try to control the momentum. I mean, that's my style of play is I try to get you reacting to what I'm doing. Instead of me having to do. And so I think once with some crafty deployment and then just the threat of these fast moving and or deep striking and or redeployment type things, you're starting the game confused. And maybe it buys one of my units a turn to get closer to you to start wringing your filthy Xenos neck.
Mm. So there's a philosophy I'm trying to suss out in my head about 40K gameplay. And it's whether you want to be the first or the second guy to get to an objective. Now, naturally, I'm pretty much exclusively talking about No Man's Land's objectives here. Because
yep.
I'm pretty sure, like, 90% of the game, whoever controls those for 3 out of the 5 turns is going to win, you know? Yep. Who's got dominance in No Man's Land? Now, is it more important to be the guy who runs onto those objectives and puts stable, hearty things on it, e.g. of the ilk of, like, Beasts of Nurgle, Chaos Spawn, Nurglings, a bunch of Intercessors, We Feel No Pain, Cataphron Breaches, things of these ilks, just tough, hardy, objective secure things? Or is it better to be the guy who clears those off? Like, so pretty much talking, conceptualizing this from a Blood Angels point of view, is it better to be the guy who puts the Death Company on them turn one and just hunkers down on it? Or is it better to be the guy who charges the Death Company onto somebody's stuff on it and kills them off? I mean, there's pros and cons both ways, because admittedly you could have given up points by waiting to go there second, but then you get to remove their ability to hold them further, and they don't have it anymore.
I think how you remove those opponents from the objective is critical, because if you commit to try to have a shooting solution against them, and then you don't kill all of them, then you're not there to contest a Red's point. But if you can get up there up close and personal with them, and then you get outweighed by objective security, what's the nightmare scenario for Sanguinary Guard or something? It has to be an intercessor with a Thunderhammer that gets the charge and kills them all, or kills down to two of them, and then they've got three intercessors standing there.
Mm. Yep. And then maybe those Sanguinary Guard no longer body block for your whatever else you've got.
Yeah, I think that's the worst case. What's another? Yeah. Or Berserkers.
I'll tell you. Berserkers. Yeah, sure. Another one. And I mean, I'm just spitballing here, but 30 guardsmen that are just standing there that move. Let's say you just killed 20 other guardsmen, but there's still 30 more guardsmen, and then two mana cores and two basilisks unload. And because they're catechin and they're getting extra hits out, and they've got payloads, so they're 3 damage apiece. And they just, I mean, like at that point, right, they're wounding on twos, AP minus two, AP minus three. Like, it's just, how long do the Sanguinary Guards stand up to that?
Yeah, and these units can chew through. I mean, I think they could put a hurt on a 30-man squad of gaunts.
Sure.
Or boys.
Sure. Well, and so that's where I was saying with these small units. So 10-man units, you can put the hurt on, you can chew 20. Into X amount, right? Mm. But there's still that many more, and they're target diffusion, so it's hard to target them all at once. I totally think you just wipe it. I mean, you'll kill more than 30 guardsmen in a turn, easy. It's just,
well,
is that going to be enough?
One unit won't. And so, I mean, I think that's maybe that's what you're asking, though, is what is one unit of Sanguinary Guard, of 8 Sanguinary Guard, do against 40 cultists?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That are fearless because of Abaddon.
Abaddon, yeah. And I was about to say, what used to happen is you used to just declare the charge on all three of them, and then you'd attack twice if you have to.
Right.
The problem
is,
though, if you just put those 30 guardsmen in 3 lines of 10, you can't make it. You can't make the second one, let alone the third one, on the charge,
because
you won't be able to connect, and therefore you won't make a successful charge. So you kill 10 guardsmen, and then there's 20 more still there. And
with your 8 Sanguinary Guard that are now
you kill 10 guardsmen
are beaten.
Yeah,
by.
And they're exposed to tank commanders and, like I said, manticores and all these other things, scions even. I'm a huge fan of scions at the moment, and I can't wait. I'm building 3 Torox Primes. I actually sold all my scions because I've got my Cadians that I've converted with all the Enviro Hazard, which is now out of production, like the Hazard Enviro Hazard kits. Yeah. Out of freaking production. I'm sad about that because I was going to buy a bunch more.
Those look cool. Those do look cool.
They are so cool. But they're my new Scion Art units. And so I'm building, got another 3 Torox Primes I'm building for them. But, yeah, I really like them because they're good at getting a lot of points. You go get scramblers and...
This is a good thought exercise, because what this is doing is walking through this. I mean, most armies in 40, or most units in 40K have some kind of gun. You know, not all of them, but some of them do. And so, I think it changes what your target priority is in the shooting phase. What you shoot. Do you shoot that unit that's right on the edge of maybe not being within 3 inches of the objective or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, for whatever your play, I mean, as the play, what is the best play to do with that in that situation? And, and thinking it, this is it's a good question. Thanks for I was thinking it through.
Yeah, so I mean, the where I'm trying to get at it from is that, I mean, this comes in. This isn't like a philosophy of game. It's more army construction. Do you put your prevalence into all OBSEC, or do you take stuff that's going to clear other people's OBSEC really, really easily? I mean, if you're lucky enough to be Space Marines, not all of us are so blessed. Intercessors do both. They both kill other OBSEC and hold object and our OBSEC. We are, not all factions OBSEC are created equal. I think Gretchen
that's the best
example. For 5 points, a Gretchen body versus does not hold up. But are you better off taking stuff that's just going to mince the absolute bojangles out of whatever OBSEC you come across, or are you better off just smashing enough OBSEC on the table that you don't have to care about what they take? Because there's going to be a line. There's going to be a really fine line between the two. And I really wonder how some other armies that we're still waiting to see what their OBSEC is really going to look like. I'm thinking about Necrons right now. People are already saying Necron Warriors with the new guns and with the real ones on reanimation, as already that's given them, well, not a huge jump in power, it's given them a new lease on life for those big 20-man blobs and things. And that's probably coupled with how much advantage you can take from cover now.
Yep.
So I do think there's going to be some really exciting times ahead for people's OBSEC units more than anything else. Because I think how good your faction is overall is directly proportionate to how much work you can get out of your OBSEC models.
But are y'all seeing that play out? Because OBSEC is, I mean, it's always been a thing, but yep. I shouldn't say always. In recent memory, it's been a thing, but it rarely seems to make the difference.
So that's I'll admit up front, that is a prediction on my part. Mm. It is theory. I can't say. I mean, I've watched some stuff. You know, watched especially these most recent events, and it's present. Like it's a factor that gets in there. But I have not seen this meta that I'm suggesting of these. I mean, multiple 10-man small units, right?
No, that's like, where it's at, man. I mean, like 120 boys in four units of 30. Not amazing. 12 units of 10 is
something else.
It is amazing.
Yeah, something else.
Yeah, yeah. I think you guys are hitting a nail on the head there. But so there's been a term coined for what some people are seeing as their fears about this edition. And it's the term bus stop. So people talking about a new archetypal list called the bus stop lists. Those lists where you bring nothing but OBSEC bodies, hearty OBSEC bodies that sit on objectives and score secondaries by not killing, by not interacting with your opponent, by simply existing. The biggest example of this one now is essentially bringing 60 Nurgling bases, an army of 60 Nurgling bases. It's on every midboard objective before turn one, and then you've got a horrible, horrible task, boring as all hell, to just dig these guys off. Now, I'm advocating the opposite of this. I think this is, it's not, do it if you want. Absolutely, all the power to
it can exist as long as there's a way to beat it.
As long as there's a foil to it, as long as there's a balance. I've got no issues with this stuff. And I think there is, but we haven't found it yet. There's going to be some bonkers
I tell you right now, you know what? Heavy bolters, right? Because
two damage, baby.
Two damage. The Nurglings won't get, because they're squishable, they won't get their disgustingly resilient.
Exactly right. So there, I feel like the foil to these things haven't quite been sorted out yet. But people have messaged me being like, oh, do you think this edition is going to be really boring? And I have to again and again and again bring people back to what it was like at the start of last edition. Do you guys remember the Razorwing Flocks?
Yeah, Razorwing Flocks and a much stronger. Oh, yeah. I'm not seeing that from this edition right now. No. It goes back to what I was saying in the first segment, is that I think we have, I don't know how many games, like I can't prove that we're down games of 40K right now.
Yeah.
I know that I'm personally down 40K, get some games.
I know I'm personally right down as well.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that even though we're almost 3 months into this edition, or is it 2 months into this edition? 2 months, I think.
It's still March, right?
Yeah, it's legitimately, we're still in like the first weeks of this edition for all intents and purposes, I think. As far as like nutting things out and seeing what the lay of the land is, we're still in our first couple of weeks.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. My answer will always be, we'll sprinkle 24 Sanguinary Guard on it, see what happens. You know,
you don't really make this dinner better. 24 Sanguinary Guard.
That's right. Take 24 Sanguinary Guard and call me in the morning. You know, that's going to be my answer. But still, I mean, you know, we don't know that. We don't know what the answer to those things are right now because we haven't had the reps with them. And so
that's right.
I do think you're talking about I mean, that's what Nurgle's supposed to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Plague Bearers, right?
Mm. Well, so, and this was a concept from last edition as well. There are Tyranid armies running around with 200 to 300 odd termagants that would just sit all the objectives on the table, and then it'd have these explosive little characters, things like Old One Eye and Patriarchs and stuff, that would come out and nibble away at your most efficient units. Things of the Sanguinary Guard ilk, things that could legitimately pull down like 50 termagants in a turn, and they'd go and like they'd send their Old One Eye missile to go sort that out. So I feel like it's a bigger issue this edition, because there's never been more points up for grabs for doing so little. Does that make sense?
Oh, fair. Yeah, it does. That's fair.
That's a good point.
Yep. So yeah, what's the army that doesn't care about two damage weapons? Isn't there one that like only takes against two damage weapons, they get their armor, full armor save? Or
I think you're meaning Thousand Suns, but Thousand Suns is against it's single damage. They get plus one to their save.
Plus one.
It's the opposite. Yeah. So two damage is what you want against Thousand Suns.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. Two damage. Find the best way to deliver the two damage.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, find the most efficient delivery system for two damage weapons. Either that, or just find enough massed strength 4 and strength 6. The strength 4 and strength 6 profiles, I think, are going to be your best profiles for horde clearing.
Well, strength 4 being 6, as long as you don't have to pay theoretically extra for that.
A huge premium. Yeah, things like assault cannons seem pretty good. They went down in points. Like twin assault cannons went down in points. Chapter approved almost across the board. And unfortunately, like, you know, it sucks that I'm saying this, but Marines have the best of all of these things. Maybe Tau and Eldar do strength 6 as well as them. Well, strength 5 and strength 6. Eldar do strength 6 so well with the shuriken cannons and the scatter lasers and things like that. And the star cannons, that's really, strength 6 is really their niche. But
pay a ton for the star cannons. Star cannons are actually, seems to be economical, but yeah, I don't really pay a ton for the scatter lasers and stuff, which are...
They are that multi-damage profile. They're the D3 damage profile. So spamming them, I think, is very strong. On top of that, they actually do quite legitimate strength 4 because you can take quite a good quantity of Eldari missile launchers now if you wanted to. And they're I can't remember what their points are. I think I've heard they're reasonable, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, so I don't want to misquote. But yeah, I feel like if you can mass those profiles, you'll be in good stead versus these kinds of armies. Even like, I'm conceptualizing Dark Angels army. Dark Angels can do strength 6 really well because of Talonmasters having, and Talonmasters and Landspeeders.
All the twin, like, assault cannons and stuff.
Exactly right, yeah. We can do those really well. So I'm conceptualizing a list now that hopefully will try and bring like somewhere in the region of 80 assault cannon shots. I feel like that doesn't seem bad. No, it doesn't seem horrible.
Because they also hit pretty well.
Yeah, but here's the thing: there, I'm giving up all my anti-tank. That is my anti-tank to run that concept. Like, there's no melter guns. There's no eradicators. So there is this big, there's a big give and take here. But it's the same. It's the same as that player. That player who's taken the 60 Nurgling bases, he's given up so many other facets of his game to put those in. Maybe we see Khorne Berserkers come back in, because you know what they'll do? They'll run right through those bad boys.
Sure will.
So, yeah, maybe we see a big resurgence in a bunch of different things. But all I'm saying is...
Berserkers. I mean, like, I know we've mentioned the fact, but two wounds on a Khorne Berserker, it's very frightening.
I really like even if you only take 10 of them, 2 units of 5 of them in a Rhino, just... It's so threatening to any objective. There's nothing you can put on an objective that 2 units of 5 won't go through. You know, that's a troop's choice, I mean.
That's right.
There's no obsec that you can have that's going to be like, 10 Berserkers, we're fine, boys. They can only attack 3 times. We'll be right. Yeah. It'll buff out.
Splitting them up like that will enable you to kind of get around the newer nuances to 9th edition so that you can charge multiple stuff with those two separate squads.
Exactly right. They have a decent reach coming out of a transport. They have their 9 inches, so you can really spread out and do a lot of different things. On top of that, it gives you options to take 2 fists if you feel like you need to, because when fists go to flat 2 damage, all of a sudden they're great intercessor killers.
That's right.
Oh, and all that mess of attacks that they'll get.
Yeah. Yep. Does it blend? You're going to find out.
Yeah, true. And then in rhinos. I mean, like, the rhinos may be the new secret weapon.
Admittedly, maybe a termite's better. Maybe the Forge World termite is just better. It's just a better rhino.
I don't know. Like, Chaos rhinos get decent weapons.
Well, yeah, you can do the combi stuff.
I mean, coming from the guy who was running rhinos excessively from all the last year, I mean, yes, rhinos are definitely still an excellent option. I think you're on something. I mean, the drills are definitely something to consider. My opinion of the drills were that they're definitely survivable. And their ability to pop up is cool and all. They are slow in comparison. And that's kind of the kicker for the...
What's their movement? Is it 10 inches or 8 inches?
I think it's 8. I don't remember that is rough. Being that high. And so with that and then... So rhinos being able to move 12 is awesome. And then the flip side, let's go in the other direction. Less survivable, but even further movement are the Dreadclaws.
Flying. What about Charybdis? Yeah. Is it?
Yeah. Maybe. So the Charybdis is kind of pointed out, in my opinion. It's. I mean, we're talking 300 plus points, and that's just kind of rough. But the Dreadclaw, though, holding up to 12 models, moves 15 inches and doesn't degrade in movement. That's clutch right there.
That's amazing, actually. Holy crap. Wow. Yeah.
15 inches and flying.
Mm.
Does it still get, like, the Melta attack?
It has a pistol that hits every unit, friendly or enemy, within 6 inches of it.
Cause chaos.
Yep, cause chaos. It's not as strong as a Melta. If I remember correctly, it's, I think, strength 6, AP minus 1, 1 damage. And so that's nothing to balk at necessarily, given that it's D6, auto hit. everybody within range. So that's really good.
I like that a lot, actually.
No, it's going to be a resurgence of chaos for real. I mean, like some of these things, like even Noise Marines. You know, you feel like I'm not getting enough for the points for what they do, even though the guns are great. But when you put it on 100% more booty on the table, I mean, it's really what you're doing.
Well, and you want to talk about, you know, killing off these mobs. I mean, Noise Marines are going to be able to do that, and they're going to be able to do it twice because they shoot twice. Yeah.
Yep. I love all the look at how we're talking about all the cult troops and all the cult icon units. We could do this. Yeah, it's so hot. Please let us be able to do this about Aspect Warriors later in this edition. I want to have the same conversation about Aspect Warriors, being like, these guys are good. These guys are good. Amazing.
I just feel so much better talking about some of this stuff. I mean, like, for Warhammer in general, when there's a powerful bad guy that we get to live out on the tabletop.
Love bad guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, it gives us context for the, you know.
Yeah, it gives us. Yeah,
I got
gives
stratagems us a force that as well. Also, you know, fight Black Legion. So
there you go. There you go.
And Black Legion, like, they might be getting pretty sick because they have their stratagems, especially the, is it Ender of Worlds or whatever it's called?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're. I think it's Killer of Worlds.
Yeah. But, yeah.
The ability to remove objective or the essentially that you no longer score on this objective.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's all huge.
That point where they push you off all your objectives, and you're like, wow, they're getting 15 points this turn. It's unless I spend these CP, and then it gets zero. You like vect their OPSEC.
Ooh,
it's phenomenally cool, and it's not. It doesn't get much. Not getting a lot of attention, but hopefully they get a little bit of a look in as well, because Abaddon is legitimately good in this edition. I think.
I agree. I think the fearless thing again. We go back to the ability. Free CP. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. And you can do the Council of Traitors to give warlord traits to the sorcerer and the Dark Apostle that you bring with you. Yeah, that's good. That's real good.
And that sounds really good. I don't know. It's nice, this rising chaos star.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it continues, because they have had a lot of stuff thrown at them. Like, they have had a lot of, I don't want to say token special rules, because they haven't been token. They've been really good. Like, all the Night Lords and Word Bearers and all these other amazing factions that got all this love in Psychic Awakening.
The anti-fallback stuff. I mean,
The Word Bearers one, we're just like, oh, I have a clutch power, I need to get off. One CP, it's gone off. It just happened. Doesn't matter.
For sure. Yeah.
And I think that stuff's really potent. But the problem was, it was still working from this relatively weak codex. Even when they got their 2.0 codex, it was still working from this relatively weak platform. All of a sudden, all the platforms you're working from go up in a wound, and it's not a weak platform anymore. Even if they don't get a new codex, it's not an especially weak platform, you know?
Yeah.
Indeed, man. Well, guys, it's been a great jaunt through several factions this episode.
I think more positive than negative for the first time in a little while.
Oh, well, y'all got anything going on this week? What's on your hobby desks?
My Torx Primes, like I said.
Yep.
I've had some terrain that for a while I've been trying to work through, and so I'm actually slapping some contrast on it. I've got some MDF I'm going to cut out. It's about time I had this terrain appropriately based, and so I'm pretty excited to get that wrapped up this week.
What kind of terrain? G-Dub, third party?
It's actually, so I'm a huge fan of the, you know, the Warcry starter box.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I picked up like three sets of that terrain, and I have amalgamated it, like thrown it all together. Once I get a little more paint on it, I'll take some pictures and send it your way, Paul, so you can post it. But I love the Warcry terrain. It is. It looks great.
That new Necromunda terrain they previewed, I'm getting that immediately.
Oh, the base thing?
Yeah, the outpost or whatever.
Oh, I mean, my gosh. Yeah, that looks
gonna
so good.
It's going to transition itself. I mean, one, the kits, you know, that they've been putting out terrain-wise, I know terrain and, like, the chapter-proof thing we mentioned in the out of the preview is causing some discussion. It's probably the best way to go about it. But,
no, but that base looks amazing.
It and I think it can swing into an orc, you know, ramshackle place.
Sure.
It could be Necromunda. It could be you know, a rundown guard outpost. I mean, it can basically be anything. I think it's going to be a sweet piece. And it seems to be like a host for the keywords. You know, there's going to be, there's something over there that's 5 inches tall or more. It's got, you know, scalable or breachable or whatever stuff. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
All right, guys. Well, y'all have a great rest of y'all's night, and I will see y'all next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Take care.
Oh, I forgot to mention. Like, share, subscribe.
And if you did enjoy my little tower rant and you'd like me to do one on another faction, chuck it up in the comments somewhere and it'll get back to me. That's only if you enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, just don't say anything. I'll move on.
We'll see y'all.
See ya.
Make my day.